Welcome to the Planning and Community Development Committee meeting for Monday, March 6th. And I have with me in the room, Councilmember Deshaun Quinn remotely so that you'll see his comments come up that way, Councilmember Thomas McLeod. So we have five items on the agenda, and we are going to start with an update on the permit review process. And oh yes, hi Nora, I see you're online.
Hi.
And Nora, would you like to present this for us? Thank you.
Sure. So here for one of our periodic updates on construction permitting. So we thought we'd do a look back at 2022 and talked about some of our numbers and what we were working on. Overall, our permit numbers rose just a little bit, but interestingly, our valuation more than doubled. So we were getting some bigger, more complex projects in here. And then the other good part of that is our revenue was up by 75%. So we're really getting back closer to our historic levels of permitting and revenue generation, which is a positive sign. The backlog of permits that we'd seen over the past couple of years is really gone. The last area where we still had some significant backlogs were our franchise utility permits. And with the increase in staffing in that area, we were recently just able to wipe that out. And so we're really working on as things come in, they're going out. And I think we've kind of reached an equilibrium in terms of our permit levels, our staffing levels, and keeping things moving. So even with all the increase in valuation and other things we've been working on, our review times have slowly decreased over the year, and we're really getting back to our historical review times. So overall, I think it's a good picture. It's good news that we're making progress and working on getting back to where we were. In addition to, just doing the work of permit processing, we also made quite a few efforts towards code updates and process improvements last year. So we did kind of look back at the 2019 South Center, Seattle Southside report, where we'd looked at the permit system, and they'd given some thoughts and some recommendations for the permit process. A couple things for context for what was happening in 2019 when they were doing that study. We had a really record high valuation that year. If you look at that chart in the staff report, you can see that really tall red line. That was the year. So we were having 50% higher revenue and permits that had been kind of our average. So it was a really busy year. It was also right at the beginning of our one-stop permitting effort. So there was a little chaos around how that was implemented and understanding how people were going to work in a different department. At this point, we've had a couple years to integrate people into our systems and do some of the cross training and understanding the reporting lines and things. So that's something that was very fresh at the moment, and I think colored a lot of the comments and something that we've had a chance to work through over the past couple years. And it was also, of course, right before the world changed with COVID and we switched to online permitting and electronic plan review. So that was a huge reset of all of our processes. So a lot of the comments I think that they had in there around consistency and cross training kind of process improvements, really everything kind of changed. We came up with a whole new process. We developed all new manuals. Everyone got trained at the same time. So some of those issues that they were bringing up in relationship to kind of our different way of doing things, I think we were able to handle with that big overall change. I'd say one outstanding issue that they brought up in that report that wasn't in staff's control, of course, is staffing. And so that's continued to be a challenge as we face tough budget years. since then. So overall, you know, we looked at what was still relevant, I think, in the 2019 study. And then we've just, as we've gone through, we try and identify issues as they come up. And then we've tried to see how we can address them ideally upstream. So rather than dealing with the fallout of situations, we've tried to see how we could prevent problems. So some of that are things like changing the way permits expire. So it used to be like the way the code sort of has always been written is you get 6 months, and after 6 months, no matter where you are in the process, you have to ask for an extension. And now we've changed it to being if you're actively working on your permits, if you're resubmitting, if you're calling for inspections, you get automatic permit extensions. And so we don't wind up with people having permits that are expiring accidentally in the middle of the permit process and having to reapply and going through a lot of paperwork. So we've tried to kind of be smart about trying to work the kinks out as we've seen them. So I think we've done a lot. I think it's been a busy year. I think we've continuing to improve on things, but in the interest of our heavy agenda, I'm happy to, you know, take questions or elaborate on the things the council would like to focus on.
Okay. So I will start with Councilmember Quinn from Jerry Nevinson and questions and comments.
Yeah, just really quickly, and one, Director Gorloff, thank you for the narrative around the memo and then kind of highlighting the things. So the first thing that comes to mind is I really appreciated what you said, that there are specifically, like, there are time-specific things that may or may not be as relevant as they were when they arised. I was thinking about that chart. Not that this is a fair comparison, but on page 4, I guarantee you there's probably a chart like this for schools that talked about kind of the, you know, maybe it'll go the other way, kind of decrease in engagement and participation and attendance and stuff like that. Quick question I actually had. Two quick questions. So on page 2, it talks about the pre-con prior to issuance. And I'm just wondering if we've kind of gotten creative while at the same time built in some guardrails so we can make sure participation in pre-construction prior to issuance, you know, whether it be virtual, as it's in here, right, virtual appointments, but also who's there so we can actually say, okay, we had the meeting is documented and memorialized and done, and now do a part so we can collaboratively kind of do our part. So that's kind of one question. That, and then the second question, in looking at the percentages, it makes me think about the report, right, in partnership with the Southside Chamber, and the fact that it's kind of date specific. But are there key performance indicators that you developed? I'm sorry, I got one more question after this. That you built around it, kind of stepping back and looking at it again, knowing this occurred in 2019. But are there some key performance indicators of how well you're doing and not? And then the last question, and this may take some time or something to think about as we talk about budget, is a real sense of the revenue generation that comes out of the permitting office balancing the staff intensive side, but also just painting that picture that we could anticipate this level of revenue with the staff that we have, specific to revenue generation, right? Versus kind of providing basic level of service to the residents. So those are my questions. I'd be happy if you can answer them now, or you can come back later, because I think the revenue one might be a long-term conversation, but the key performance indicators, just wondering if y'all have thought about those.
Sure. So pre-cons are, our same group of people just meeting at an earlier time, again, because, you know, we're finding it easier to try and handle things upstream rather than deal with, they started construction, they didn't put the erosion control up, they didn't put the tree protection up, and now the tree's down, you know, mm-hmm. and now we're in code enforcement to try and make sure we're all on the same page before they break out the backhoes. So usually that's the building inspector, the infrastructure inspector, or maybe a planner if they've got some landscaping and other issues there. We try and make it streamlined. It's usually, you know, we'll get out there within a day or two for that. So there was some startup education around that when we made the switch, but I think it's going much smoother now, and I think it is saving everyone a bit of time and stress on that. You know, in terms of performance indicators, I think the one that people are most attuned to is that kind of average time to the comment letter or issuance. And so Rochelle's been tracking that. And like I said, it's been floating downwards from where we were. I would say, like I said, I think we're at a bit of an equilibrium. I don't think that's going to come down a lot unless we make some changes either. You know, we never know what's going to walk in the door. We know what our staffing is now. And, you know, I think we can continue to look for ways to be more efficient and streamline our processes. But I don't think things are going to get cut in half with our existing inputs at the moment. And then I guess probably the other thing is that number of outstanding permits, like how many things do we have in the queue? And, you know, we control the staffing side, but not the input side. Some cities do try and kind of throttle the number of things that come in by requiring scheduled intakes appointments. And so they only let so many permits in a given week or month. We don't do that. We let anyone walk in at any time, 24 hours a day, and make their application. So, you know, we float with the economy and, the development cycle on that. You know, revenue is an interesting one. You know, it just kind of depends on what projects are at what cycle of the development. I know you guys have been talking about fire revenues recently and changing to a more cost recovery model on that. I think we're pretty consistent with other cities in terms of our building permit fees. And that's really the lion's share of the fees that we get in the door. You know, we are definitely moving back towards our historic level of really covering most of our department expenses with our permit revenues, although we're not quite back there yet. You know, we can probably provide more information if there are other more specific things you'd like to hear.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. And I guess one way to think of it, yes, covering costs, but then generating revenue comes for the city, right? There's mm-hmm. a different
yep.
way you can look at it. And I just wonder if that's been looked at as well. Not so much from a standpoint of kind of just long-term thinking about here's what we can expect. Even though, I mean, so goes the permitting office as the economy, but and the housing, you know, I guess appraisals or whatever. But there's a fundamental, like the permit office can produce this, all things being equal. And here is the cost recovery number, but here is the overall number, and so between that is a revenue, right? So just something to think about. I'm just like mm-hmm. I said, I'm throwing it out there. All right, I'm done. Thank you.
Councilmember McLeod.
Thank you. Nora, when did you take your current position? Did you come back to the city? Was it in 19 or 20?
It's been just about 2 years. It'll be 2 years, April 1st.
Oh, so 21.
Okay. 21, yeah.
The year 19 and then 20 and 21, probably 22 for that, have been anything but normal.
Right.
And you trying to come on board after just an intense workload that 2019 produced. or ask of our department. So I wanted to take that kind of that understanding and go to the permit application extensions.
Mm-hmm.
I got a text from Iggy over in Cascade View.
Right.
Or he sent me a message that he was still wanting to get resolution. I thought we had resolution for him, but he falls into that category there, the automatic permit application extension. Is there an effort? Oh, go ahead.
Well, his permit had expired before we made that code change. So the solution for him would be to come in for that, I thought, a pretty streamlined new permit.
He sent me a long one. Can I forward it to you?
Yes, of course.
I'll send the email to you because I don't have an answer for him. But my question is, are there people like him or just people that have something hanging out there that during the course of the hecticness that was the last 3 years or so, that we just need a little bit of something to clean them up and then we all can kind of go forward on a more defined and certain path? Because the last 3 years or so, it's really been a challenge for a variety of reasons. And I wonder how many are hanging out there just that they'd love to get them cleaned up. We'd love to get them cleaned up. Do you know, is that a big number?
It's been an ongoing issue that people aren't tuned in to that permit expiration date. I think we've, between sending out notices via email rather than hard copy and the automatic extensions, I think we've dealt with a lot of it, but maybe not the backlog that you're kind of talking about. I think one thing that we see, especially on the smaller residential projects, is the contractors don't call for a final. They wrap up their work, they get their money, and they walk. And the owner has no idea that the permit final has never happened. And so the permit expires. And so that's a thing that we're looking for some solutions on. People don't know that they need to make sure that the contractor has called in for that last couple inspections. So that's sort of an education issue.
You guys are working on trying to come up with a solution for that?
We've been, can we ask for an owner email? Normally, if a contractor comes in for the permit, we don't necessarily get good owner information on single family, but maybe we could get better owner information and let the owner know directly that a permit is expiring. There's some logistics involved in that, but we're trying to see if maybe that's a way to make sure that both of them, if the contractor's not being responsible for it, how can we make sure the owner knows too?
Okay. That communication piece is really big. We never hear about it unless they reach a level of frustration. And they could be at fault. I'm not trying to imply it's all on us, but how do we extend that arm or that hand out to people and know that, look, if you do A, B, and C, and I kind of thought we had an example of Iggy, but maybe not. Just so people have an experience with our permitting that they enjoy doing business here or they appreciate doing business here in Tukwila. I like what you're doing here. Are you fully staffed now?
No, we have
one and a half
permit review positions that are frozen, and we haven't been able to hire the intern because of the frozen positions.
Is your staff really young as far as years with the city?
Yeah, we've had a lot of turnover. So Braden and Isaac are great planners. We love to have them. They are on the newer side, lower experience.
Okay. It's 2023. It's a new path forward, isn't it?
Right. Yeah.
With where you're at now, is there something from council that you'd like to be able to have that would allow you to kind of maintain a high level of customer satisfaction?
Well, being fully staffed is always helpful, right? I mean, but I understand that it's a citywide issue of balancing budgets and, we can only do so much, right?
But if you had the money, would you be challenged to get the 1.5?
Possibly. I think we could probably hire the planner more easily than the plans examiner. That's been a challenge, but you never know, right?
Okay. I don't have any further questions at this point. I appreciate the work you're doing and the results you're getting. So thank you.
Yeah, so I did want to say something. You've got three senior council members here, and we're getting into the weeds pretty much on this. And I wanted to talk about that a little bit. We all realize that we do not direct staff on how to do their job, but my view is that in DCD, there's a lot of policy woven into this. So we're asking you a lot of questions, but they're to inform what we do on the policy level. And if we sort of get directional, or if I do, please just know that really it's about policy for us. And knowing what is going on down on the ground floor, this is important to us, especially since we do get calls from people in the neighborhood or businesses. So I wanted to preface with that, because I'm going to ask some really specific questions, and I just wanted to have that as the high-level view of it. So regarding the review timelines, that's on page 3. So good that you're moving this down to 6 weeks in quarter 2. That's pretty soon, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a noble goal. What would you say the review timelines were pre-pandemic? Oh, it says it's 4 to 6 weeks. So pre-pandemic, it was typically 4 to 6 weeks. Is that true?
That's correct.
Okay. And the permit backlog's been nearly eliminated. Congratulations for that. So I have a question about the permits. This is great. Overdue is not, it's getting way better. But one thing that has been called to my attention is after a permit is issued and then the person replies, that they're, quote, back at the end of the line again, and it might be another 8 weeks until they get an answer, in which case they need to act on that, and so on and so forth. And hopefully there'd only be one round of that. So can you tell me, or later tell me, for these permits, if they have a second round, how long that is taking? You might not have that data right now, but that would be good to know.
We'll try and pull some numbers on that.
Yeah, and now I'm going to ask a couple things like this, and I want my fellow council members to just say, that's excessive if I get to that point. So that is because to have a 6-week response time is really great, or an 8-week. But then if on top of that, you've got 2 more rounds of 6 or 8 week response times, plus the gap between then when the applicant is making the amends for whatever it is, then it starts to get elongated. So that's something that I am looking at. And,
can I is there a way that you can build in awareness of, like, we got halfway there, but the applicant didn't go 100% there, right? And build that into the assessment, because, you know, it is, there's always, well, ideally if it's collaborative, then there is a kind of requirement steps that are important for the applicant to do as well.
Yeah, and so absolutely. I do think that applicants typically are very highly motivated to keep going, and there's, of course, always exceptions to that. At least that's what I'm hearing. And so another thing is, do we have capacity for someone to just pick up the phone and call somebody and say, hey, you're missing this. It's just a small thing, instead of waiting 8 weeks out so that they could be working on that concurrently. For when it's finalized. Again, I don't know your process. These are things that have been suggested to me. So again, I'm in the weeds and I'm acknowledging that. So those are some comments that I have. So my question that you can answer later, because I've got a lot of questions. I should probably just write them down and mail them to you, email them to you. But so that's a question, is how to handle those subsequent iterations of the permit processing as it goes along and then creates an elongated period so that it's not just 6 or 8 weeks with a period after it, as far as how long it takes to get a permit so somebody can successfully complete their project.
And if I could just add in, some of this will be also surfaced under the next item too. So, which is talking about doing a holistic review of permitting, including, I want to be really clear, codes and regulations and what we're requiring up front of not only applicants, but of staff.
Yeah, because it's almost 6 o'clock now and I am just getting, just starting on things. I'm thinking that I need to just write some of this stuff down and ask these questions. And then, Nora, that gives you time to look at them and answer them. I did email you, but that was just one thing. And then I'll tell you, let's see. So I did want to ask about the continuing permits and also the other issue, which may be in the next item, is just having there be a turnaround time that that if somebody is working on their permit, and I know they could have gone through the pre-application process, and they get stuck. Pre-pandemic, I'm hearing that they could call and they would get a human on the phone. It wouldn't be like you have to email them and then it starts churning and taking more time. And I know that's people, but it's just like, so the customer service, where do we put that priority? I also heard we used to be able to walk in and do permits. I'm like, maybe the phone calls, right? Maybe we can do the phone call part of it. So, and you could walk in and ask a question. So those are the type of feedback for the customer service levels. That I don't know if that's realistic now, but that's just something to think about. And it really makes sense to me. I know I'm frustrated when I'm on a project and I have to email somebody and then hopefully get an email back within a couple of days when you really want to get going on it. So that's another thing that I can't tell you the solution. That you can always have lots of staff. That would be a solution, but I don't know what other kinds of solutions there are. And also really being intentional about streamlining processes. And I know that the department, DCD department, is doing that. And I'm sure there's plenty other places that streamlining. And so I'm looking forward to hearing about that in the future. And so with that, I'm just going to tell my fellow council members, I have other questions. I'm going to just write a list so we can move on. So, and they're along the same ilk as the questions that I just asked. They're just questions like that, procedural questions. So, are there any other comments? All right, so let's go to the code, permit process, and culture review section, which is number 2. Rachel, yeah.
Thank you. So, for the record, Rachel Bianchi, Deputy City Administrator, I'm here really to see whether or not there's appetite among this committee for what is going to end up really to be a budget amendment in order to make this happen. We as staff have certainly heard from all of you kind of along the lines of what you were just talking about, committee chair, right? How can we look at things differently? But we've also taken some inspiration for what the new fire marshal's office has done, which is to look at our fire code and go, where are we doing best practice and where do we deviate? And what onus does that have on, let's be clear, not just the applicant, but the staff as well, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're suggesting that as we look, council members, as process, that we actually start with our regulations and requirements and codes and determine where we may have similar items to the fire code. So the new fire marshal is going to be bringing you a suggested new fire code, which is really better in alignment with our neighboring jurisdictions, right? Does not compromise public safety, but perhaps does not trigger the same amount of rules and regulations that we currently have. So one of which today is if you change of use, you have an automatic conversion to sprinklers, right? There are other ways to achieve that goal of keeping a safe place with not having that. And so there's more to come on that, but we looked at, well, so as we were thinking through, you know, permitting, building, land use, public works standards, where are there deviations that we could potentially change that would enhance the experience for the applicant and reduce the workload on staff to be able to achieve some of the timelines and things that you all would like and continue to have, you know, our high level of livability in this city. So, for instance, we have higher SEPA thresholds than the state requires, right? The state allows for a category exempt up to 30 units. Ours is 9. That's a pretty significant difference, right? So we would like to suggest that as we look at the overall process, right, as we look at culture, that we also start with what are we requiring and are those requirements onerous or not. And so we start there. In order to do that, that's going to require a budget amendment because we are going to need somebody from outside to come in and do that audit and review for us. And so what specifically I'm talking about is our building and land use codes, right? So those are two different things. Another example, we require a window replacement permit and inspection once you get it, right? That's an example. But then the other thing is our public works standards. I have no idea how our standards stack up against other jurisdictions, but let's take a look at those as well. So the idea is let's look at the code. Let's use this opportunity. You've got a building code update coming through, right? Because it's a building code update year. I'm not sure we can meet the exact timeline, but we can make the changes after that. Let's look at that. Look at those things, and then we can look at other options. The other thing I want to add is that I think, as you know, we are expecting changes out of the state legislature this year that are going to affect all of these things as well. Mm-hmm. So I have personal experience working on your behalf, working with the Board of Architectural Review, and that taking a very long time, right? I do think we should revisit the Board of Architectural Review, whether or not the state mandates that or not, right? That many jurisdictions and best practice are moving to an administrative versus an outside board in order to reduce those times. So that's another thing that we should talk about. Looking at process, looking at culture of customer service, looking at KPIs, all of those things are opportunities for us. But I think we should start with, what are we requiring? Is it in line with what our neighbors' jurisdictions are? And if not, what are we willing to relook at and change? I mean, the other thing is, because I have started the staff reviews, is a lot of our code was developed when Tukwila was a different place and we had different places, different building opportunities, right? Now, because so much of what we're doing is infill, a lot of what we're doing is our more difficult projects. Right? Because we don't have as many open green spaces. So people are building in critical areas, right? People are building in places that are just not easy to build on anymore. And that's part of also what we need to think about as we move forward. So really, I'm here to see if there's consensus to A, do this work, and B, come back to you with a budget amendment to pay for it. Because as you all know, staff is very busy. If there's not going to be an interest in doing a budget amendment, and then we should find something else to do. So happy to answer any questions. Hope that makes sense.
Yes, it makes sense. Thank you. Tom, Councilmember McLeod, we'll start with you.
You're on mute, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm very interested in this process, curious the cost and what we would anticipate the outcome to be, how long it would take, but running parallel with what the state legislator might do, I'm very excited about this and I would like to see us pursue it.
Thank you. Do you have any other comments at this point?
I'm more curious about like what it would cost, how long would it take? Is this something we could wrap up in the calendar year, or you see it as being a longer process?
I can say potentially from what I know today, right? I mean, we have to go through a public process to identify who can come and help do this audit for us, right? Mm-hmm. So it's hard for me to give you a cost right now. Mm-hmm. I expect it to be under $150,000, and that's a big number, but I'm picking a big number, right? But to somebody to come through and do that work, I think it's within our ability to do. We have to adopt a new building code by the end of, and Nora's going to tell me if I'm wrong, the end of or June 1 in order for it to be effective July 1, basically. I'm not sure we can get some of these things in that update, but you can always do a subsequent update later on in the year.
I still support this direction and I would like to see it happen. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll be streamlined on my comments. I'm also supportive. I have the same question that Councilmember McLeod had around the cost. And then in addition to that is how do we make sure and manage the scope of this project, knowing how much potential actually could be generated from this. So my streamlined comments are, I think it's good to do standard best practices. Here's what I hope, because we have existing documents that lead us to also incorporate these considerations, which is our values, right? Yes, we want to be efficient, but we also want to make this commitment towards addressing equity issues like the heat island effect, like the urban forest canopy, kind of ways around cost consciousness, but also acknowledging our unique kind of situation, knowing we have an aging housing stock that is at that place that they're turning over. So there's some uniqueness involved in it. But I think that's a real important one, is whatever we decide, and I understand sometimes we'll go for efficiency or for revenue or we're benchmarking, but there are some core things as it relates to our values, which may not be exactly the same as other jurisdictions. So how do we kind of build in the strategic plan and some of the other things that we've developed, the Equity Commission, on how we incorporate being intentional when we actually propose these things? And that kind of thing could be wrapped up with a little bit in the RP, but I really think we got to be able to display our values on this one.
Yeah, and I think it, and we at least need to understand what the consequences of our values are too, right? So I think the tree ordinance is a great example, right? That is a value this community stood up and was something that we heard and is important to this community. It is also adding time mm-hmm. and money mm-hmm. to applications and mm-hmm. to permits, right? Mm-hmm. And so we need, to comprehensively understand that mm-hmm. so that when you get questions, right, mm-hmm. why is my permit taking that long?
Mm-hmm.
Part of it is because it's a values discussion.
Right, or safety, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, again, if we have an urban heat island, there are certain things that you got to consider, but also, the urban forest, urban canopy is one piece, but also just, thinking about preserving the folks that can live here, which mm-hmm. means, we take a look at a neighborhood and does something particularly fit, and then how do we incorporate that in your permitting? But I'm all for it as long as we are being holistic about it,
mm-hmm.
which includes the values.
Thank you. I like the idea of values because I was thinking about the tree canopy. It's like, so is there any way we could streamline that or make it more efficient while keeping that value, or maybe it needs to just be changed a little bit or tweaked so that we can have that value. And that's for the experts to decide. And so I want to say, Nora, Director Gerloff, that I feel after talking about this, like you kind of came into the middle, it's just like you came into the middle of a storm. And this allows us to go up in choppy seas. I won't say this, but it's like choppy seas. There's a lot of stuff going on. The pandemic came. And then if we do this and we have this study with some outcomes, probably recommended outcomes or a menu of things that could be done, then it's like you get above it and then you allow staff to be successful, because we have a really hardworking staff. I'm sure it's really frustrating for us to say it's too long and all this. So this is really the way to handle it. Thank you, Rachel, for championing this. And I'm all for it. And it also changes the way that I think about asking those questions to Nora, now that I know it's going to happen pretty quick, right? So it sounds to me like you're like, we're going to okay this. We'll get the funding and then we'll just get started.
Yeah. And I just want to say, I've already started talking with staff in there, and staff is excited about this and being able to surface to you all what some of these things really mean on the staff end, right? As well as on the process and then the applicant end. So the next step would be coming up with an RFP or some sort of public process to get a consultant on board to do that work of reviewing. But staff has lots of ideas and they're excited to share them on changes that they code and regulation and standard changes that they see that could make a big difference for applicants.
So Nora, I'll send you those questions, but it's more so you think about how you're going to answer them in light of the fact that we're going to be going through this particular the study. And some of them are really questions. They're really comments in the form of questions. So just keep that in mind. I don't want you to do huge amounts of work if we're going to be changing everything sooner than I thought. So that's, or at least looking at it.
Making modifications, let's be clear. There's lots of great things going on.
Yes, there are, and that's true. I need to be careful with my words there, because we have a good staff. And
great folks.
And let's give them the tools to be super successful. So thank you for that. And to be continued. And so on this particular item, do we have consensus that we support a budget amendment? And I didn't look to see what's next for this
We'll come back to you with what the actual amendment would be to move forward.
Okay, however soon you want. That is wonderful. So, yes, I know. I just assumed you were a yes. Sorry. So, you did say you were enthused about it. So, great. Thank you to all involved. Discussion only is item C, an update on the rental housing program. And this is going to be Joseph. Is your last name Mosey or Mose pronounced?
It's pronounced Mosey.
Mosey. All right. Thank you.
None of this.
You wasn't either of those that you said. So Mosey.
All righty. I'm just going to go ahead and switch over to our slideshow, and we'll get through this. All righty. So good evening, council members. Joseph Mosey with DCD's Rental Housing. So pretty much going to go over what we've been through in the past year. And first, I'd like to introduce our team, of course, our awesome team. Introduce Lori Solberg. She's our rental housing program admin, pretty much the foundation of the whole team, dealing with issuing and paying the licenses, scheduling inspections, and tracking and organizing all of our rental cases and so forth. Just tons of various tasks she has on her plate. So thankful for her work. New to the team, we have Wally Snover. As of last year, new addition to the team, as in, he's the secondary inspector for us, which is great to have, especially with the amount of inspections that we're templated to have this year. So it's great to have two city inspectors out in the field, you know, to be flexible to conduct these inspections. So here's our rental housing team. Now, just to go over some admin updates from the past year, you know, with the new resolution effective December 13th, 2022, we've recently bumped our amount of units to inspect. As far as from 1 to 4 units, now city inspectors can inspect up to 1 to 12 units. You know, we find this beneficial for the property owners, you know, who hasn't had the experience to have a city inspector. You know, they might have always gone with a private inspector. So it gives them that option to go either private or now city. Kind of beneficial on our as well. You know, as an inspector myself, I tend to like to be out in the field to have eyes on these properties and, you know, put a face to the paper once we, you know, do our licensing and whatnot. So, as well, as you all know, with, again, with the new resolution, there's been an increase in our fee inspection. So from $62 from last year, now to $75 per unit. Then after that, each additional unit, $35. One thing that's not noted is the reinspection fee as well. It's been a slight change for that. You know, in the past, we've had the initial fee price of a unit would be the same price for the reinspection. This year's, it's every reinspection unit would be $35 per unit. So also listed, we have the 2023 license fees for each unit. And as of February 16th of this year, the rental housing program has 4,559 registered rental units and 529 active rental licenses. Now, as far as for inspection updates, so within the past year, we've definitely received an increased number of courtesy inspections. Now, these are inspections that are, you know, requests by the tenants. It's not the standard mandatory every 4-year inspections. These are requests by tenants, you know, who may have issues within their units that, you know, that they brought up to the property owner and maybe, you know, the response time isn't in a timely manner. So lately we received a bunch of those calls and emails, you know, and more specifically, we received a lot of mold complaints. So we've definitely seen a bunch of those come around. In 2019, the city has conducted about 133 inspections. In 2020 and 2021, they were paused due to the COVID. Now, we bring this up because after the resume of inspection in 2022, we were dealing with a bunch of, you know, failed inspections and not saying that's all bad. It's just because it's been so long from, you know, these properties, you know, doing these mandatory inspections and we're all following up. So pretty much the message here is just saying without these regular inspections and, you know, the rental housing conditions, you know, residents will be, you know, living in an unsafe home. So it's great that we still do this. And I can definitely show the numbers at the end. But just got a few examples as well. So for the first example, it's more of a recent situation. On January 9th, 2023, we received a complaint about a, you know, a tenant dealing with mold issues, just as mentioned. And in this case, it seems like a maintenance issue that, you know, they brought up to management. They may have delayed in the response, so they reached out to the city. I've conducted a courtesy inspection with the permission of the tenants. You know, I was able to take some photos and built a report. Now, with this report, we send that over to the management, pretty much just give them a heads up, hey, the city is tracking what's going on. You know, what's your plan of action to get this resolved? So just having that extra reinforcement. But as of now, we've got a scheduled reinspection actually this Wednesday. So more to come forward on this property. I was notified a couple of weeks ago that maintenance has come back, come out and took a look. So good things coming out of that. Now for our second example, it's probably a familiar case. This was back in July of 2022. DCDs was contacted by fire department about a water leak. Now, this wasn't a little water leak. Obviously, it was about 10,000 to 20,000 gallons of water that dispersed in the crawl space. So, you know, this kind of raised some red flags from all departments, fire department, TPD. Now, how does this relate to rental housing? This is pretty much just gets us on board of, you know, we want to make sure that the tenants, how are they affected by, you know, this situation? So the next morning we were able to be on site, spoke with the management, you know, we discussed what's their plan of action, and just providing, you know, whatever resources they needed. So we put them in contact with the city, streets department to, you know, discuss where can this water be pumped out and so forth. Overall, the communication, you know, was great. Just understanding that the tenants weren't affected by the flood. They got the water up and running the next morning. So all of these little things, but this, what I would definitely say is a good example of, you know, what the rental housing, you know, we don't only deal with just inspections and issuing fees and whatnot, but, you know, we get involved with all the rental housing. So moving forward, here's just a couple numbers we put together, overview of the licensing, the different type of dwelling units, the revenues over the past few years, and just inspections. This was last updated February 16th of this year. So license issued, we had 369 license with balance still overdue, 110, and total licenses, rental license, 529. With 559 total units. Now the center chart is more of a just something just put eyes on, you know, kind of interesting to see that there's single family, how many units are registered within the city of Tugwala. So single family 279 and so forth. To the top right corner in the orange chart, it's just a breakdown of the revenue over the all the way back to 2020. Something to take away is the difference between 2021 and 2022. You see that $30,000, a little over $30,000 difference. And that's just because of the pause of the inspections during the COVID. And once we resume back the inspections in 2022, so increase there. Also to note, in 2023, you see the already from January, the revenues up at $32,000 because of the new resolution that was put in December. And last in the green chart, we have just a breakdown of how many inspections were conducted by both city and private inspectors. So you can definitely say that, you know, the city's inspector has been out and about last year, and we definitely would expect increasing numbers this year. So with that being said, that was just a quick run through of what we've been going through. Now, did they have any questions?
Joseph, sorry, could you take down the slide so that we could see better? There you go. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Quinn, do you have questions, comments, remarks?
Yeah. I think it was on page 19, kind of talking about city versus private inspectors. I just wonder, does it also kind of having the city as an inspector also kind of do some kind of fee containment, economies of scale, just as a consideration of a benefit to, you know, I know it can be involved, and I think having viewed this program for so many years, there was the thought of, okay, we're doing it in-house, now we're going out, we're evaluating both. And I think when we went out, there was like a concern about follow-through and follow-up and are they doing the right thing. And so I do like this cost containment piece. I did have a question. So that was kind of a comment, but maybe one also consideration around kind of benchmarking and best practices. But it's just, we looked at kind of 2019 through 2023. What's the communication on there? And so maybe I can be as specific. Have we kind of shared the rental inspection program in the hazelnut? And so I'm kind of starting with providing solutions and not just offering challenges, because I think what we're hearing from folks is that they didn't know, right? And I'm assuming in multifamily housing, there's just a turnover that folks may not know the rights that they actually have that the city of Tukwila provides. So I'm just wondering, could we kind of measure the communication side around this rental housing program, because it also helps to legislators ask about it sometimes. And again, I know we're probably individually getting pinged from folks, and it's surprising that, one, the more you roll out what we're doing, the more they acknowledge, wow, you're doing more than another jurisdiction. So just wondering about kind of how do we broaden the communication? Looks like Rachel has an answer.
Thank you for that question, Councilmember, because in the latest edition of the Hazelnut, on the back page, you will find information on the rental housing program in multiple, in our top four or five languages. Mm-hmm. So we did go ahead and do that very, very recently. In fact, the one that just hit the mailboxes shortly.
Great. And then historically, that's just a question if you want to get back, like, when we've kind of talked about it, and maybe we can learn from that, that maybe it can be a standing thing, especially as much as this comes before us, that folks are notified that this is available. Like, you don't get, it's not like we're trying to get credit, but sometimes you don't get credit if people don't know about it because they're not utilizing it and aren't aware of it. And so sometimes that kind of helps educate folks even before they ask the question, because they know this thing exists. And it's at their fingertips, right?
I could also add that, this was definitely a question that was brought up last year. And, you know, there's always good ideas out there that we want to communicate this program more often. So we do have it on the website. You know, it's something there. It's pretty bold, courtesy inspections, you know, about the program. But also word of mouth, you know, every time inspectors are out there, we also hand a card out, you know, let them know about what's going on and what we offer. So,
can I just add one more thing? Part of this is experiential. So, Joseph, what you described as a kind of, empowering experience of like being there, putting a face with a name, putting a, I just wonder, as we think about reporting out in the future, just always giving us a kind of point in time. It's going better that we have more inspectors, or the private inspectors are getting better at what they do, what they're doing, or we're seeing multifamily aging out to the point, because some of it looks structural, right? And I'll end here, is like, yeah, you can have mold. And we all know, right, is you got to peel back what's back there just to make sure it's not in the studs and in the drywall. Again, having experience of this, just how you kind of resolve that. Now, I'm not asking how you resolve it, but just those are the, like, little things with a lot of detail that could be informative. Even for someone who's like, I got mold, I don't want to call, I don't want to complain. But then, hey, here's the challenge with that. Here's the potential fix with that. Here are some of the questions that probably should be considered. So, all right, I'll stop there. Sorry.
Thank you, Councilmember Quinn. Councilmember McLeod.
Joseph, nice to meet you. What kind of response are you getting from landlords? Is it kind of a tense interaction, or they're willing to work with you?
Well, it's a little mixed. mixed. You know, you definitely have a lot of property owners who want to do the right thing, you know, and they understand the program. And then you get the one who gets a little fight back every now and then, you know, just so you kind of see a little mix on both sides, you know, but it's just the understanding, you know, most of the question comes about is why do we have this, you know, as far as for property owners. So, and then the tenants, their question is, oh, I didn't know about this, you know. So that was kind of what response we received.
Is there something more we could be doing to notify tenants? I guess there's the hazelnut that just went out, but yeah, I think this is probably something not a lot of people know about.
Yeah, it's like I said, you know, this, if there's any other greater communication, we can definitely you know, do these events where we can have rental housing come about. And you know, we've decided to do the virtual the website, just that's been the most common lately. And again, the word of mouth, I can't appreciate anymore, but just being out there and just, hey, here's my face, here's my card, you know, we're here for you, so kind of thing.
Well, I appreciate the examples you gave here. They're eye-opening, situations that people are living with and around. So thank you for the work you're doing, and I like the direction it's going. So thank you.
Thank you. I like that idea. Just I'm going to just say the pushing this out and maybe having a booth at community events. I don't know how much capacity you have, but we've got a lot of people, like at Cascade View and the park there. So that's something to think about. To have just an informational booth there. So we, this was discussion only. Thank you, Mr. Mose. I'm going to say your last name so I remember it, Mose. And thank you, Joseph. And we will, wishing you the best as you continue on those I can't even talk anymore. Inspections, and we look forward to our next week. So it is now 6:33. So guess what, Brandon? You've got about 10, 14 minutes to bring up two items. Can you do it?
I can do it in five. It's, you know, I can do my part in five. It's all the questions you may ask me. So can I start with the first one, council member?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
So this is a funding request from Starfire Sports for a two-year funding request for $110,000. The total per year is $55,000. Starfire regularly has used lodging tax funds to promote their tournaments to attract teams. They have not had a funding request since 2019, actually. They did not request any lodging tax funds in 2020 or 2021 or 2022 because of the pandemic. So they're trying to get back up to being able to really get back to full capacity to bring in tournaments. So Starfire overall has, from a heads and beds component, it is one of the few generators that we have in the city. You know, last June we attracted the play-in event for the Surf Cup. It's a major tournament that's held in San Diego. The tournament that they held brought in well over teams from five states in the British Columbia. So, and then we're having talks with Seattle Southside Regional Tourism Authority about another major soccer tournament that's going to bring in about 200 people, or 200 teams, excuse me. So I cannot stress amount the impact that Starfire has. So staff recommends approval of this. It was reviewed by the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee at their February meeting. They recommended approval of it. We're recommending that it goes to the March 20th consent agenda. If you're good with that and it passes consent, I also need to do a contract with Starfire Sports, and I would ask for the committee's permission to put that straight on the consent agenda once it's ready to go.
Okay. Thank you. Let's see, where am I? Council Member McLeod. Comments, questions?
No, I'm really happy with the work LTAC is doing and with Starfire and just the level of activity that's happening down there. I think it's a good activity, and I think it's high visibility stuff. So I'm in support of this, and I say good job. Continue doing this type of work.
Thank you. Councilmember Quinn.
Yeah, I'm supportive of putting this on the
a consent agenda. Brandon, you answered all my questions, LPEC, all that stuff, seeing it. And so the only one thing I would say is that in working with the contract, making sure that the city attorney sees it. Otherwise, I'm very supportive of moving it to the consent agenda.
All right. So I will officially ask if I have consensus from my fellow council members to put this on the consent agenda, adding the contract to it, which will be reviewed by legal and then added. Yep. Is that right?
Yeah, and just to clarify, I won't take it to the March 20th. I'll take the application, but we want the council to approve the application first, and then we'll come back with a contract.
Yeah. But it's not going to go through committee. You'll just put it on the consent after that?
Yep.
Okay. So we'll see both of them on the consent agenda at different times, and we have consensus. So thank you. And on to the next item.
Thank you. I want to say one thing to Councilmember McLeod's point about Starfire. You know, city councilors and staff are oftentimes responsible for the actions. You know, we take the blame for past actions of people before we got here. But we also should be able to accept the credit. And I think, you know, the city councilor, the city of Tukwila in 2001, 2002, and ultimately in 2003, that city councilor, and we've maintained that investment with Starfire Sports, we created a world-class facility that is drawing more and more people there. And the World Cup is going to be a great opportunity. We're going to brief you about our opportunity coming up. It's going to be exciting what we're going to see in 2026 when the world comes to Tukwila. So I'm kind of digressing on that, but, you know, a lot of kudos to the city councilor for what they did in 2003 with Starfire. So this is very quick. This is our end-year analytics for Experience Tukwila. This is our digital side. You got all the information there. You know, this is our first 4 year of being up and running with all the programs running, really having a cadence on posting and on getting more information out there. Just to give you a big snapshot, nearly 6,000 people came to experiencetukwila.com, 10,000 page views. Our social media resulted in over 450,000 of total impressions across 3,000 total followers on all of our social media. The big thing that I really like is if you Google certain phrases, you get Tukwila popping up early. Things to do in Tukwila, Experience Tukwila is the third item listed. Things to do in Tukwila, Experience Tukwila is the second organic item website found, and then simply putting in Tukwila into the Google search engine results, and Tukwila being the 10th website listed, which I think is really good. We're never going to beat the city of Tukwila just because it's got way too much. It's a .gov, which is always going to rank higher. But, you know, this is the investment that we're continuing to make with good content. And the other big thing about our website is that when we do great events, we can host it on our website. We did it with Juneteenth. We did it with some other activities, and it's a place where we can direct people to find information about that the event while also learning about the city of Tukwila. So there's no this is discussion only. Just wanted to give you, you know, all three of the council members here have had a hand in Experience Tukwila when you chair the LTAC and saw it. So just thank you for your support, and we're going to have some fun things coming in 2023.
All right, Councilmember Quinn.
Just keep going. And I liked your phrase on giving credit where credit's due. And although I wasn't here in 2003, I was here when we changed the fields from softball fields to soccer fields. And that was a big lift. Yeah. Not, we had the greatest turnout in council meeting. Yeah. Not in a good way.
We did. Councilmember McLeod.
Thank you, Brandon. I want to ask about the need work takeaways. When I read through that, it sounds to me like there's parts of this you're not happy with the results, or you'd like to see bigger, better results. Could you just speak to that, maybe what your thoughts would be going forward as to how do you maybe change that narrative?
Yeah, no. So first, you're always going to see something that needs work in something like this, because we're never going to be perfect. And so there's always something we can do better. And that's why I want to be very transparent. There's positives and there's negatives, and or not negatives, just things we can do better. So the first item is our bounce rate. So So this is when someone comes onto a website and then they immediately exit the website. We don't want them to do that. We want to have a bounce rate of, I say, around 50%. So we need to have better content on. As soon as someone comes on, they want to stay on the site. We're not acquiring our social media followers as quickly as we did when we first started. I think part of this is because of Facebook and Instagram have changed kind of how their algorithms are working. So we're going to have to address that. The newsletter the open rate's amazing. If you get an open rate of around 1% or a click-through rate of 1%, that's amazing in the business sector. We're above that, but we need to do better at getting more accounts. And I really would like us to be able to own things to do in Seattle or restaurants near SeaTac Airport in Google search terms. That's just going to take us – I don't think we're ever going to be – things to do in Seattle, I don't think we're ever going to get the top of the list, but we can do better. And so that's just going to take us investing in our website by some – a blog. That's why we have a blog. It creates content on the webpage. People may not read it, but Google Analytics goes through there with their little spiders – and they recognize the site, and then it helps us in our search rankings. So the other one, and this is, I can't believe I'm going to say this, is that we might need to make sure our website is proficient in Bing. Bing is starting to gain a little bit more, I think, market share with their AI. And our website, everyone creates their website now for Google. They don't even think about Bing, but I think we're going to have to make sure we are, have a Bing-friendly website moving forward. Good. The number one search term on Bing, do you want to know what it is?
Yeah.
How do you get to Google?
Yeah.
We'll see. Their AI may just eat them alive. So.
Yeah, that's true. Or eat the world alive.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't have any more to add.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. I just said that. My husband says he's fascinated by AI. I'm like, woo! So, I don't have any further comments about that. Thank you so much. And yes, we saw the field, soccer fields turn into, was that the last comment? Anyway, so yes, we saw them turn from softball fields to soccer fields. That was interesting. Yes, and yes, we've all been LTAC chairs, which has been a pleasure for all of us, I think, mm-hmm. that all three of us can say that. And yes, it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out with Bing, and congratulations for being the third hit that comes up when it says things to do in Tukwila. So, well done. And at least according to me. And thank you. I just opened my wrong agenda. I think that's our last item. And so this was for information only. And with that, any other comments from my fellow council members, observations? I will be reporting out on this during reports. I'll talk about our topics that we had on the agenda, the salient ones, and thank you.
Well, remember to say the thing about the contract will come up.
So we're adjourned, council members, tonight.
Yes, we're adjourned. Thank you.